Welcome to JFK and the Enduring Secret. I'm your host, Jeff Crudell. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. Today's episode is episode 190. And yes, it's a wander after a wander after a wander. I'm getting a little sheepish as I continue to apologize to all of you out there who listen and are current in the episodes. I keep telling all of you that we are going to turn to the topic of Oswald and the CIA. And we are going to do that. But just like in life, other things keep getting in the way. We haven't published much in the way of episodes in the last several weeks, and I apologize for not giving you some advance notice on that. My wife and I, along with some very close friends, took a much-needed two-week vacation, and I actually had the last two episodes, which were published yesterday, lined up to go, and then we had a bit of a technical difficulty right at the last minute, so it had to wait until I came back. So again, sorry about the delay in getting some new episodes out to you. And there's another dynamic that's impacting all of these wanders. Of course, we are only months away from the 60th anniversary of the death of President Kennedy. It's a big anniversary. Actuarially, most of the people that have been somehow involved in this are gone. They were either old enough at the time of the event or just lived a normal lifespan. But by the 50th anniversary on 2013, most of the key witnesses had passed. There's still a handful of them left now, people like Marina Oswald and Ruth Payne, but not many. The sun is setting on those who had first-hand knowledge, and soon it will be completely over the horizon. But consistent with what seems to happen every 10 years, as one of these anniversary points arrives, is that there is a renewed interest in the issues and the topics surrounding the JFK assassination and the other assassinations that occurred in that time frame as well, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and others. And of course, the other phenomena that is impacting things currently is the decision by RFK Jr. to enter the presidential race. Having a Kennedy running for president right around the time of this most important anniversary is in and of itself stirring up significant interest in the topic. And because he himself has made comments about his own theories on who was involved in the assassination of both his uncle and his father, that too has spurred interest. So it's not surprising that someone like Paul Landis, a Secret Service agent who was there present in Dallas on that day, who at the age of 88, he himself, in the sunset period of his own life, would make a startling revelation. Mr. Landis has had the benefit of a New York Times article and a Vanity Fair article, two important publications that, if they even cover a story, give it significant credibility. That is, when it comes to newsworthiness. I'm not suggesting or making any comment on the veracity of his actual claim, and we'll get to that in just a minute. Mr. Landis is about to publish yet another book on the JFK assassination, or at least on his own experiences as a Secret Service agent and one that was present in Dallas on that fateful day. The talk surrounding this book is stirring up controversy, and it's generating lots of questions about his motivations. Are they altruistic, or are they motivations of an older man eager to cash in, perhaps, on a sensational fact that was necessary for an otherwise unsensational book to gain traction and be published? I mean, after all, what exactly is this Secret Service agent going to reveal? These are the kind of comments rolling around blogs and shows right now that cover the JFK assassination. Once again, pitting those that favor conspiracy against those that don't. I do have my view of all of this, but there are many experts on this topic that should scrutinize and weigh in, and I should listen to them before I wade in myself into that mix and talk specifically about his claim. Some people believe that it's odd that he would have hesitation to say anything up until now, although we know that many people have had hesitations, so that may or may not be a factor. Many in the research community want to believe him because they surmise that this revelation somehow assures that there was a fourth shot. I am of the opinion that the revelation, true or not, was not needed to validate that at least four shots were fired. Rather than analyzing whether Mr. Landis's claim has veracity or not, is not where I am going at the moment. But it gives us a great opportunity to pivot and take what I think might be a rather large wander into one of the more controversial questions surrounding the assassination. Was the Secret Service involved in any way or not? And that question is a rather important one. Could there have been a conspiracy involving the Secret Service or elements of the Secret Service? After all, they were the group responsible for protecting the president, and they failed miserably by all measures. So perhaps the real question worth exploring first, before we get into the ancillary topic related to Landis, is whether this monumental failure by the Secret Service was a result of something tangible that we can point to with little sinister implications, or whether, as we dig deeper, could there have been a sinister and more proximate connection to the president's death? Let's take the time to delve in more to just that topic and see what we can discern. But before we analyze what has already been written about the Secret Service role in all of this, let's try to summarize the obvious questions one might ask in this circumstance and use that as a framework as we go through this wander. First, were the Secret Service protocols robust enough, if they had been followed, to prevent the assassination? I think we will find that the answer to that, without much effort, is a clear yes. And both the Warren Commission and the HSCA had their say on that. So that implies that the protocols were not followed. And if so, why not? Was it an error in the planning process, but not in the execution of that plan by the agents on the ground? If that is true, then that points us perhaps in a different direction related to the men in the hierarchy that were responsible. If it was the latter, though, that is, if the trip was planned properly, then what happened on the ground that was a failure? And why did those things happen, if they were not expected to happen, given proper planning? All of these initial things I'm talking about are not necessarily sinister at all. Tragic for sure, but not necessarily sinister. But what if there was more? More to the story. What if perhaps there were just a few bad apples in the Secret Service detail at the time, and they somehow were conscripted to practice such a gross dereliction of duty that it either artfully became part of a premeditated conspiracy or unconsciously paved the way with little or no remorse? And how about keeping it a secret afterward? Would it be possible for the same problem to develop within the Secret Service that surely developed within other parts of the government? A pattern we have seen develop and reoccur already in the first 189 episodes of JFK, The Enduring Secret. And what would that cause the Secret Service to do? To unabashedly lie about some facts in the aftermath of the assassination and while it was being investigated in order to cover up or mitigate the errors that occurred around the conduct of the Secret Service and the safety of the president? And why would they do that, perhaps? In order to protect the reputation of the Secret Service? After all, more so than even the FBI, they were wholly responsible for the safety of the president. Although, ironically, the Secret Service rivalry with the FBI would play into it all in a unique way. And again, if there was something sinister, would those in on it be powerful enough or persuasive enough to compel others within the small coterie of Secret Service agents to keep their mouth shut and toe the official line? And then, would those not involved get a sense that there was something more, but stay quiet out of fear or some sort of twisted loyalty to the service? Were there any Secret Service agents whose actions during the planning phase or the execution phase were suspect, and suspect in a way that points to sinister involvement? On this topic, we may simply point out the detailed list of dubious activities that the Secret Service was involved in, and then point to which Secret Service agents were involved in those activities. Were there any known Secret Service agents connected to this event who so abhorred Kennedy personally that they would find motive in participating or helping to facilitate in some way the assassination plans of others? And finally, we always come back full circle to motive for any action taken by a human, and we should explore other reasons why some of the hierarchy might have liked to have seen a catastrophic failure by the Secret Service. This kind of failure, because the silver lining, so to speak, for them, if such a thing was to occur, would have been the lightning bolt event to secure funding and completely revamp the resource set that would be available to the Secret Service. Now, obviously, that's a far-fetched one, that last one, the idea of allowing a president to be killed in order just to get resources. But that concept is out there. In all of this, one only has to recall the story of the ancient Praetorian Guard in Rome to know that all it takes is for the guard to stand down. Yes, that is all it takes for an emperor, and in this case, a president, to be gone. For there is danger almost always lurking. Well, all of what I have just mentioned is totally hypothetical. So let's get down to the facts, but let's make sure that we're addressing some of those questions as we go, because those are the kind of questions that in the end have to be answered with some veracity to understand one way or the other whether we think there may have been something more sinister involving the Secret Service. We've heard a lot already. Some of these things I've talked about pretty explicitly on the program in some of the previous episodes. Some I haven't, but they're all out there pretty generally known. Off the top of my head, I'll talk about some of them. How about the rewrite of the Secret Service reports over the weekend, when all of the individual agents individually submitted their stories? They were inconsistent. And the chief agent, Agent Rowley, required all of them to conform to one story. That in and of itself is an interesting and very quizzical fact, and we'll get into the more details of that as we go. I think we need to understand the background on each of these agents, and we'll do that. That isn't something we've done already. When you get into the details of what these agents have said, and it has been quite limited since the assassination, there is a general consensus that certain things said by certain agents were an attempt to scapegoat the president himself, make him responsible for his own death. When we talk about the background on each of these agents, one of the things we're going to get into, which is quite interesting, is the fact that many of them had CIA and OSS backgrounds. Perhaps not that surprising, but the point of all this is that the interconnection between this small coterie of individuals and other arms of government is deeper than you think, or it was at that time in 1963. You know, most agents loved and respected JFK. There were a few who didn't. I'm sure the issues regarding his philandering got mixed reviews amongst the men, and there probably was a wide range of opinions on that. But generally speaking, he was mindful and respectful and engaging with most of the Secret Service agents, and they would tell you that after the fact. We know that racism bleeds into this. The tragic story of Abraham Bolden has to be told in the context of the Secret Service, and we're going to do that. Bolden sensed that the plot was there, and he attempted to speak out, and he was punished for it. And it was easy to do that under the cloak of racism. Most of us know that there were multiple plots to kill the president in different cities in late 1963. The Chicago plot was foiled, but there is a big question as to why the details of that plot were not passed along. And in fact, much of the evidence was gathered up and controlled in advance. Why? And the story gets even more curious when you talk about the Miami plot that involved Joseph Miltier, where it appeared as if he had absolute advanced knowledge of exactly what was going to happen. Luckily, that information was properly acted upon, at least in Miami. But why wasn't all of that properly passed along and considered in the Dallas trip? The idea that everyone knew that there was a plot in the works and that somebody was going to attempt to shoot him using a high-powered rifle from an office building. My God, if that were the case, do you think they would have proceeded through Dallas the way they did and then accepted the little jaunt through Dealey Plaza with virtually no policeman looking up and no check of any of those windows? I don't think so. That dog don't hunt. There was at least one agent who said he was going to get Kennedy. Oh, and didn't we spend a little bit of time on the chain of evidence related to the body at Bethesda? And don't we have Secret Service agents involved there? How about the bullet fragments and the chain of custody associated with those fragments? How about the autopsy photographs and the assertions that Robert Bauch destroyed all the pictures that were contained within his safe? How about the phalanx of motorcycles dropping back behind the presidential limousine? How about the agents being waved off the car and the running boards, receiving a command right at the moment of the assassination, in real time, not to approach the car after the first shots were taken? Only Clint Hill disobeyed that order. Who was involved in the change of the motorcade route? Oh, and what about all of the shenanigans with the windshield on the limousine and the destruction of evidence within the limousine itself? All of these issues and many more need to be explored in more detail, and we'll do that. Now, as you know, I do very little original research. I rely on what I think is the most credible research that is available and the most credible documents that are available around a particular given topic on this show. And there is one person who is widely seen as the definitive expert on the Secret Service when it comes to talking about the JFK assassination. And his name is Vince Palomara. He has a wonderful channel on YouTube, and he's written a series of 4 or 5 books, I can't recall the total, that chronicle his work related to the Secret Service odyssey within the JFK assassination. And we'll be drawing heavily from the statements that Palomara makes in that body of work collectively. Survivor's Guilt is his initial and principal book. And as I said, he published a number of other books after that, including Who's Who in the Secret Service, all of which cumulatively add to our understanding of this topic. It's a scary thing to go down this rabbit hole. And as I have emphasized in all of the previous episodes of JFK, The Enduring Secret, is that you cannot throw the baby out with the bathwater. There very well may have been some sort of Secret Service involvement in the conspiracy, certainly to cover it up. But the real question is whether or not they were actively engaged in the assassination process itself. A Praetorian Guard moment, so to speak. Like I have said in the past, it doesn't mean that the entire organization was corrupt or was involved in some sinister act, but it may very well have been the work of a handful of individuals who felt a certain way. And I say that as a hypothetical because at the end of the day, I'm not concluding one way or the other. What I am attempting to do is to reemphasize the idea that all of us out there, when we deal with such serious subjects as this, have to keep in mind that conclusions must be in context and they must be circumstantial. We have to be very careful about making generalizations. There are a lot of good men and women that have put their own life on the line for our presidents and their families and have done it faithfully and have done it consistently and have kept their oath of secrecy. After all, it is called the Secret Service, and have served this country in a highly respectable way and commendable way. But at the same time, it's our obligation as part of this wander to ask the critical questions. And we're not trailblazing here, but in light of the current events, I think it's incumbent upon all of us to take a minute and to do that deep dive, to take this wander and to ponder the actions of the Secret Service. So over the course of the next several episodes, and I'm not sure exactly how much material we are going to present, but we're going to explore these topics. And the whole objective is just to ensure that at the end of the day, we know as much as we can know before we make the pivot and start asking the tougher questions of Mr. Landis and the Secret Service. After all, don't we owe that to him? And don't we owe that to ourselves to not jump to conclusions, but just stick to the facts? And then let the facts speak for themselves. So let's get going. And in an unusual step, I'm not going to make this initial discussion and wander on the Secret Service any longer than it already is today. Let's take a break and eat a sandwich, and you'll hear more from me over the weekend. So, without further ado, let's have a sandwich. Thank you for listening to episode 190 of JFK, The Enduring Secret.